time for Lickin' On Lending.
Welcome, everybody. Good to have you with us.
Welcome to Lickin' On Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news, all related to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Transformational Mortgage Solutions. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. Now, here's your host of Lickin' On Lending, David Lickin.
Let's begin.
Good to have you with us, everybody. It is Monday, September 14th, 2020. If you did not get a chance to go listen to the podcast that we broadcast on Labor Day, I had my old friend CJ DeSantis on. We're talking about a really interesting article that got published. So love to get your feedback on that. Also, then we played the last Ainsworth Advisor August summation of the comments about what we think you can view the industry as. Very interesting comments. There's one comment from Joe Murin that was really interesting. And I encourage you to go listen to that podcast from last week if you didn't listen to it, if you haven't already done so. We're so thrilled to have you as our listener. Again, this podcast is created by mortgage professionals. It is for mortgage professionals. And we honor all the CMBs listening to here. And I'm stressing that just a little bit because of our guest just getting her CMB. I'm so excited about that. I'm about to get mine. I hope. Fingers crossed. Anyway, we're grateful to have you as our listener. Again, our commitment is to bring you timely information in an audio format that you can listen to anytime, anywhere. A lot of people keep asking me, are you really going to do a video? Yes, we are. Just had some delays here. My wife broke her shoulder. Man, it's amazing how when your life partner goes down, it's a challenge. But anyway, our hot topic today is one that should be near and dear to everybody. We're talking about specifically the earning levels of what's going on with IMBs. Housing Wire published an article that said that IMBs nearly tripled their net gain per loan in the second quarter. This came out of the MBA Research Department headed up by Marina Walsh. She's Vice President of Industry Analysis, and many of us think she's like our favorite analyst out there because she always delivers the news with a smile, whether it be good or otherwise. So we're excited to have her. And joining me on this podcast will be Les Parker, as well as all the regulars. And we're going to be asking Marina a bunch of great questions. And we're going to be focusing in on earnings. What's driving this? And so can't wait for her to be on here. And again, the best news is Marina just is the latest CMB to join the ranks of CMBs. There are many of them out there. Alice, Les, Andy is already a CMB, and Alice is a master CMB. So how about that? Anyway, so good to have her with us, Marina, and we'll have her join us on the hot topic. So stay tuned all the way through. We're thrilled to be a part of the Industry Syndicate. Go check out all the podcasts at industrysyndicate.com as well as a part of mortgagemedia.com. Special shout out to all our listeners. There's so many listeners are writing us right now with how much this podcast means to them, how much this is helping them. I'm thrilled. Particularly, I want to focus on those that are new to the industry, how they're finding this podcast being one that is helping them grow and accelerate. The MBA's got some great programs through the MBA Educational Department. Jeff Schumer heads that up, and so we're thrilled to have that. But we're a free resource that's out there to help you grow in the industry. I want to say a special thank you to our sponsors, the Mortgage Bankers Association of America. We have Marina Walsh representing them here today. We always stress the importance of getting signed up for the Mortgage Action Alliance. Every time we mention their sponsorship of the podcast, we're thrilled to have them. But it's most important that they're here to help you have your voice heard, especially on the Hill. So folks, join Mortgage Action Alliance. You should join the MBA, but the good news is you do not have to be a member of the MBA to have your voice heard through the Mortgage Action Alliance. It's something that the MBA has set up, and I recommend you download their app so that you can have your voice heard on the Hill. The MBA does a great job of representing us and our interest there. So please sign up for that. Also, very excited to have Finastra as a sponsor. Check out their Fusion Mortgage Bot product, as well as Lenders One and the Mortgage Collaborative. Both of these co-ops help create competitive advantages for lenders and vendor members. Also, we're a part of the CMLA, Community Mortgage Lenders of America. Again, I love how these organizations work together. The MBA, CMLA, the Lenders One and the Mortgage Collaborative. We're all working together to help you be more successful. Oh, by the way, in CMLA, we've got Michael Jones going to be coming on as our guest next week. Excited about that. Then we also have Indicom offers automated solutions. Go check out our recent podcast where we had Linda Bomar on, as well as one of the executives talking about RPA, August 31st, robotic process automation. And also we talk about AI and what they're doing in that area. Again, this is Accelerate. This company helps lenders close more loans by engaging more effectively with their prospects and customers. Also, we have Ainsworth Advisors. Again, we featured Ainsworth on our last podcast on Labor Day. Check out that. Again, that's a board of advisory service. It's one of my companies that I own, and I'm so thrilled to provide that as a service. Board of advisory service. It's formed as a board of directors, but it's a board of advisory service. Also, Celebrity Home Loans, growing rapidly through acquisitions, as well as Innovient. Ted Kramer and the team there do a great job of optimizing your executions. It's a business intelligence tool that you need to check out, as well as KnowledgeCoup. They do a great job of helping you with a learning management system, as well as Mobility RE, as well as Modex. Both of these companies help you identify who out there is the next best candidate for your company. It allows you to get material, real, live information on LOs and processors that you're recruiting into your company. So check them all out, along with VendorSurf, Velma, and Vidyard. Finally, also special thank you goes to Alice, Andy, Alan, Matt, and Les for their contributions each and every week. So let's head over to this week's MBA Mortgage Minute with Rob Van Raphorst. Rob?
Hi, I'm Rob Van Raphorst. Welcome to the Mortgage Minute and the latest news from the Mortgage Bankers Association. On Friday, the Conference of State Bank Supervisors publicly released an August 25th letter to their member state financial service regulators. The letter urged them to extend any current guidance or no action positions allowing licensed mortgage loan originators to work from home rather than from a licensed location. Additionally, the non-depository supervisory committee asked those state regulators who have not issued such a public notice to consider allowing MLOs and other licensed employees to work temporarily from safe, unlicensed locations, or to adopt a no-action position given specific consumer protection criteria as defined in the letter. Also, last Tuesday, MBA filed comments responding to the CFPB's proposed rule to amend the general QM definition by replacing the debt-to-income ratio limit with a price-based approach. MBA expects the CFPB to issue a final rule by year's end. That's it for now. Thanks for joining me.
Good job, Rob Van Raphorst. Appreciate the partnership with the MBA. Thank you, Rob. Good job. Check out all the information at the MBA website. They provide so much good stuff as far as what's going on in the industry. Really appreciate the whole team, and specifically what Rob and that department does. Let's get over to Les Parker with the TM Spotlight and this week's macro view of the markets. Les?
TM Spotlight Soundbite is brought to you by PowerSeller, making hedging easy. In the market stands a boxer and a hedger by his trade, and he carries the reminder of every move that laid him down or cut him from the fallout. Who wins? The Fed's devaluation wish for the dollar, or the EU's wishes for all its members to bow to their regulations? Rates remain low, but the bears recently took control. With high political risk, will the bulls recover? What market jab or hook will deliver a decisive blow? Orderly changes in currencies, shifts in taxes, spikes in inflation, excessive use of corporate and sovereign debt? The news may change, but the hedger still remains. These views are my own. Go to tmspotlight.com to subscribe to my daily newsletter.
One of my favorite old songs, bring me back to my college days. Yeah, I'm old. Yes, I was in college when that was out. It makes me old. Matt Graham here with MBS Live. Check it out, mbslive.net. Good to have you, friend. Appreciate you and your website. Gosh, this is good stuff. I got always on behind me.
How's it going,
Dave? You constantly, because every time I do a Zoom call, you are on live. And they go, hey, what's the markets? What's the 10-year doing? Can you see that? I see that line going down.
Happy to help. So let's get caught up with last week really briefly. It was basically a story of pushing back against some weakness that we had the week before that. We didn't get to talk about that because we didn't do a show last week.
Hey.
And yeah, at the time, the week before, we talked about being afraid or hoping that we would hold underneath a ceiling of 0.79 in 10-year treasury yields. And of course, it's not perfectly pertinent to mortgage rates given capacity constraints right now, but it still speaks to the overall volume and momentum in the bond market. And we'd never even got close to 0.79. We spent the entirety of last week moving lower in yield and never even broke over 0.73. So this means the range was extraordinarily narrow. It's been narrow in the bigger picture anyway, but now it's narrow even in the smaller picture. And so narrow that we're forced to question, okay, we see markets and traders are taking their seats on the side of the street of a parade, and they're waiting for some big show to come through. So what is it that they are circling the wagons for? And we will talk about that when we get to this week's data and this week's events. So Monday, today, nothing major going on. Then tomorrow, we do have industrial production at 9:15 a.m. Not the biggest market mover. Skip Wednesday for a second. You might know where this is going already. Thursday, housing starts, building permits, expecting to see more growth there. And Friday, consumer sentiment, not a big market mover. Oh, and I should mention that the talk of the town last week and will be again this week on MBS Live was the adverse market fee reintroduction. So a lot of my audience likes to know about locking versus floating. And the last 3 weeks said that is primarily a function of when your lender is bringing back that adverse market fee. And they're all over the board in terms of how they're bringing it back. Some are already applying it to every new lock. Others have said every new lock after such and such date. And others are doing it in a staged manner, more logically, I would say, where we have your 60-day locks are going to have it right away, then 45 days will have it 2 weeks later, and so on. So people that are listening, if you're not up to speed on it, make sure you check with your and see when that fee is coming back. It's a really big pricing consideration for your clients. Now, on to the big show for this week. It is, drumroll, Les knows what's coming. It's the Fed. So Fed announcement this Wednesday at 2 p.m. And this could be a very big one. Maybe not in the bigger picture in terms of market movement, but in terms of the Fed shifting gears. And they already alluded to this 3 weeks ago, 2.5 weeks ago, with their inflation framework change. This really paved the way for them to do something new and different. Fed speeches in the interim have suggested the same. And just to refresh our memories, we talked about this last time, but that inflation framework change means that instead of targeting a 2% inflation level, they are willing to let it run hot, maybe up to 2.5%. And they're going to be slower to hike rates when it looks like inflation is rising to or above those levels. They have seen a disconnect between inflation and the labor market. And these are things they learned over the past few years. And making this framework change is going to allow them to come out much more aggressively this Wednesday. A couple of things we might see them do. The top two would be a forward guidance shift and a wham shift. I'll talk to you about what those mean. Forward guidance is just the Fed's reaction function. It's them saying, here's what we expect to be doing with monetary policy in the future. And so that forward guidance is probably going to get more qualitatively friendly in their verbiage. The wham shift is weighted average maturity of their bond holdings, and it's just a way for them to add accommodation to be bond and rate friendly without actually spending additional money by buying longer term debt, longer weighted average maturities. They could also do that by recharacterizing their bond buying from being about liquidity and smooth market functioning and now instead calling it straight up accommodation. They alluded to that in the minutes last month. And they finally could actually, second to last finally, they could announce additional bond buying or put some sort of calendar date on it, and that would be very impactful for the bond market. And last but not least, a tangent, we have the dot plot coming back, which is their summary of economic projections. And we've heard a few Fed speakers allude to the possibility that markets would have been surprised by this dot plot if it hadn't been for some of the jawboning they've done to prepare the market for it. So what I think we're going to see is probably the average Fed member thinking rates are going to be low for several years. Many of them have already said this, but now it's going to be on the record. And they're going to see economic growth low for several years. And it really has the potential to be a sweeping accommodative message from the Fed, which at first glance should be great for the bond market, but you never know how it's going to go on Fed Day. It could go seven different ways before it settles down. But that's the focus for this week.
Good stuff. Good stuff. There's just so much going on. I like what just before we all got on, went live, Marina Walsh said some things. We have so much to thank Powell for and how he's handling this. So it's interesting. Good stuff. Matt, always appreciate your comments. Check out MBS Live, folks. You will not be disappointed. MBSLive.net. And enter LOL for Licking on Lending. Many people have chuckled about that. Enter on LOL in the sign-up code. You will not, it'll extend your trial, it'll double your trial, period, and you won't be requiring a credit card. So sign up. You want to put in your credit card, and you do want to sign up for the service. It's that good. It's excellent. Matt, thanks so much. Appreciate you being here each and every week, my friend.
Thank you, Dave.
Alice Alvey is here with us, MBS CMB, Vice President of Education and Training, Master CMB, I might add, Vice President of Education and Training at Union Home Mortgage, and she's got this week's legislative update. Alice, how you doing?
Hey, I'm well, thanks. Dave, hi, everybody. Here's my quick update. Rob Van Rant, of course, touched on something briefly that I want to make sure everybody caught, and that is the need and the pressure that's going on at the state level to really address loan officers' ability to work out of their home for the states that have a brick and mortar requirement, is what we would call it. Even if the state could simply say, we're not going to take action, that's all they need to say. We're not trying to say, go change your laws, but for now, there needs to be another patch to make sure that loan officers and their staff can be safe working from home, which works out just great, we've all found. Those of you who are in a brick and mortar state, to really get behind and pressure your state organization to make sure that they're going to issue a no action position. Some of the states have, but not all of them have. Some of them are coming up for expiration. So for those of you in a brick and mortar state, you want to watch that closely and make sure you're using your advocacy to make sure that keeps moving forward and keeps you protected. Another thing that I want to make sure everybody's aware of is the CFPB needs to do something before the end of the year for the conservatorship that Fannie and Freddie don't have right now, and the fact that we need to solve for QM. So if you remember 10 years ago when the law came out, we said in 10 years, the GSEs will either be out of conservatorship or we'll have to address the definition of a qualified mortgage for the fact that if you get a DU and LP approval, that the borrower is automatically considered in a QM position and the loan is considered a qualified mortgage. So now that we're coming up on that January 10th of 2021 deadline that we all thought was eons away, they are going to have to do something. So we'll watch this closely for you, that we do need to get that definition adjusted. The simplest thing is to just extend it to, well, whenever the Fannie and Freddie do exit conservatorship. So that is one thing. Last but not least, I do want to make sure it is you all take a chance to read the MBA General QM Loan Definition Response. The comment period is closed for what does the new QM look like? When the CFPB was asking about this, that closed on September 8th while we were all off. But the MBA wrote a really interesting piece. They really detailed some of the other position statements that have been made about why a 43 DTI does not make sense. I think a lot of people go, I'm on board, get rid of the DTI and just give me an APR to work with. But in looking through their 22-page response or something like that, I really think it's great reading for those of you who really want to understand more about this issue so that you can sell better. I think originators could benefit from understanding this as well, because it's real easy to say, hey, just let us do a 50 DTI, but that really would make our life much more complicated. So let's just go with an APR. So we'll see what happens. We'll watch that for you also, Dave. So those are our three things for today. I'll kick it back to you.
Good. Can't wait to have you participate in the discussion with Marina here just shortly. Alan Pollack, good to have you here with us today, as always. Hey, Alan, did you catch that Jonathan Kaur is retiring from Ellie Mae? So acquisition. He's got some big news. Now, there is some other big acquisition news. I thought we could announce it today, everybody, but I heard from the president of another major company who's a good friend of mine, called me yesterday, and we're going to have to hold on that news because I don't get teased up with that. So should be coming out tomorrow. You'll be hearing about some more acquisitions. There's a lot going on, Alan. What you got for us today, Fred?
There is. What a great time to be in mortgage financing. There is so much. Yeah. And I think I said a couple weeks ago, I feel like there are some big moves being made. We've seen a couple big ones this year. We're going to continue to see it. As we know, the pandemic has pushed so many people to go digital or to further their digital plans. And that's some of the things we're going to talk about today. So let's just get right to it. One thing I do want to mention real quick, though, is for anyone that's been following Amazon, their drone delivery, a couple of weeks ago, they were finally cleared by the FDA. So they now have to put a plan together. It still has to be, that plan has to be approved, but the FDA has approved the initial plan to airdrop packages, which is really interesting and has nothing to do maybe with mortgage specifically, but has everything to do with just technology and automation and AI and just us adopting more further technology. So very cool on that. David, there's a company out there, and I mentioned this company named called Orchard. They just raised $69 million in their Series C. And the reason I mention this is because we keep talking about the same technology, right? Certain point of sale things, digital closing, right? All the things we need to talk about. Blockchain's continuing to heat up. But this is a company, they operate as a broker. They have multiple products. The first one they call Move First, which takes the traditional real estate transaction and allows customers to purchase their next home and move in before they've sold their current one. They also have a different product that integrates digital closing services to the real estate transaction, taking away all the stressful parts. And they also introduced an innovative online home discovery product called Orchard Home Loans. So just think about that. They have all these tools on the real estate side, and they just raised a Series C, $69 million. So there is a lot of cool stuff going on. We're going to continue to find ways to talk to the consumer. That's what we do. That's what we're here for. PwC, by the way, every year they put out these fantastic surveys. They just did one. It was an exclusive consumer study. They had 1,620 recent and prospective borrowers in this study. They did a statistical analysis. Of course they did. But anyways, what they found is that lenders who offer high digital quality tools have higher customer satisfaction. We've heard this before, but they listed with the 6R. So 1,620 people all said scheduling and communication tools, mortgage affordability tools, loan status portal, saving and planning tools for mortgage specifically, educational tools for mortgage specifically, and an application and document submission portal. So those are the six things that PwC said. I think we all knew this, right? That's where we're all been focusing, but I thought it would be great to mention. The other thing I want to bring up today, David, the financial brand. We've talked about some of their stuff in the past. They do great content online. They do a lot of surveys and such. They just went through this nice big article. It talks about the ability to apply for a home loan has increased, but the banking industry isn't keeping up with consumers' expectations. And why is it so important? Because we have so many listeners on our podcast today that are banks, credit unions, financial institutions, and you are tied down hard to existing technology and you haven't been able to improve and make those next steps. It is so absolutely important. So I wanted to cover one thing, low tech, how to make big gains in customer engagement with existing technology. And I'm going to say just one thing today. Next week, we'll expand upon that. But one thing I want to say is making phone calls and contacting your borrower. Make the human connection and talk to them. It doesn't matter what kind of technology you have. That's the highest tech thing you can do. Looking forward to our hot topic guest in our conversation. And then we'll talk to everyone again next week.
Yeah, I'm interested in what Marina has about technology. That's an interesting survey that Pricewaterhouse did. So very interesting. Thanks for bringing that up. And we'll, if you send over a link, we'll put that in the show notes so people can actually go and check it out. Yeah, thanks. Thanks. Appreciate it so much. Andy Schell, the Profit Doctor, Dr. Andy Schell, the Profit Doctor. Now that he's got his full first PhD, working on a second PhD, what an overachiever. So we have Dr. here with us, CMB. One of the, you know, you can go over your doctors, but we got to really stress the CMB. It's such a great program. And now having gone through the education, boy, I can sign up for that and push that out for everybody. Such a big
one. Yes, Dave. So that's why on my business card, the letters after my name are longer than my name itself. But I actually ignore all that when people ask me about it and they say, well, what? How should we reference you? And I said, well, actually, my favorite title is Grandpa. Don't worry about Dr. Schell. Just call me Grandpa. So I spent the weekend with my granddaughter, brand new baby, just born last Thursday morning early. So we got to keep my grandson overnight. So that was fun. So we're excited. So I got to hold my granddaughter this weekend, and I wrote a liquidity policy for a bank.
You wrote a liquidity policy for a bank while holding your granddaughter.
Perfect. Yes, exactly right. So the thing about this liquidity policy is it identifies how to not run out of money. Now, so we're going to make it so we we don't have any failed payrolls or have any failed margin calls or have any failed loan funding events. So what's funny to me about this is that here this FDIC bank that has access to the Federal Home Loan Bank system needs a liquidity policy, but when you ask independent mortgage companies about a liquidity policy, their eyes roll back and said, we've got more volume. But you think about 2008, you and I went around the country looking for warehouse lines, 2008, yep. 2009, trying to get anybody to lend money to a mortgage company. So we had significant funding risk in 2008. And then as Maria mentioned earlier, we had margin compression in early 18, where we were losing money. People were losing money on every loan and hoping to make it up in with volume. And then we had these big economic transition that occurred, and now we've been making crazy money. So except for the MBS rally that led us to margin call risk. But right. 2020 is going to be probably one of the highest margin, highest volume years on record. So here's what my grandfather used to say to me. He goes, Andy, you got to make hay when the sun is shining because you never know what will happen next. So this ties back to a liquidity policy, believe it or not, because we need to be responsible with preserving our capital now that we've got a good year. We're grateful to Powell and all the reasons that led to the macroeconomic events that allowed us to be successful. But mortgage lending is the tail wagged by the economic dog. Macroeconomic factors drive mortgage lending. Rates up, volume down, margin compression hits, home sales down, volume down, price risk, volume rates down, volume up, capacity challenges, but profit up like we're experiencing right now. So now's the time to build cash reserves for 2021, 2022, and there's a bunch of pieces to fit together to make this work. I've got a long list of stuff to talk about, the things that cause liquidity pain, the way to manage liquidity dynamics, the way to look forward to predict what happens next, and I'll be talking about that over the next several weeks. So we can talk about how to measure all this stuff, how to have enough cushion. What to do with your cushion? Don't just leave it in the bank. We're going to start self-funding some of our loans. We're going to talk about all this. But one side note I wanted to make about this amazing year we're having. Now, this amazing year we're having is going to be reported on the NMLS report. The NMLS report includes information about volume and income for all originators. I was on the phone with the president of a mortgage company last week, and they've lots of folks that are in seven figures, some folks that are going to hit eight figures. We're going to have LOs making eight figures in 2020. In the midst of all, that's going to be reported to the Department of Labor via the NMLS report. What then happens then when someone reviews PPP funds? So we had record-breaking profit, record-breaking margin. Oh, and by the way, we got free money from the government. I'm not saying don't do that. I'm just saying don't spend it. Save that PPP money. Apply for the forgiveness. Follow all the rules, but don't assume the questions are over because I think they're actually just starting. But anyway, that's just my opinion alone. That's Dr. Shell, the Profit Doctor. That is not Licking on Lending or anybody else associated with it. That's what I think.
I agree with you 100%. I think people that have this, taken the PPP, have done so sometimes, I think, at their own peril as money has been made. That's not to say you shouldn't be careful on it. That's all right. With words of wisdom. And Andy Shell, thank you so much. Can't wait.
Oh, perfect, Dave. Yeah, we got two acronyms created in 2020, PPP and PPE, both PPE. Created in 2020. How about that?
It's been a year like no other year, I got to tell you. So anyway, thank you so much, Andy Shell. Being here for since the beginning, as well as Alice and everybody who's been here for so long as listeners. Thank you so much. Now, this wraps up this week's weekly update on what's going on in the market. For those of you who are listening live, just stay right here because we're going to get right into the Hot Topic segment. Welcome to the Licking on Lending Hot Topic segment for this week. We're so excited to have joining us today, Marina Walsh. She's Vice President and Industry Analyst of the MBA. Also joining us, as you hear him each week, is Les Parker, but we have him on live this week as he too knows Marina and will be asking some of the questions that we have. Les and Marina, welcome both of you live to the podcast. Marina, so good to have you back.
Great to be back. Thanks for having me, Dave.
And congratulations on a major accomplishment, getting your CMB. I think that's just so outstanding. And it is such an accomplishment when you realize what goes into that. Come on, for those that are on the fence, Marina, just tell why people should go through this. I mean, isn't it quite an amazing journey?
It's an amazing journey. It's about 9 months worth. It took a little longer because of COVID and setting up online proctors. But I would say it's a great networking opportunity, too. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you go in, here I am celebrating my 20-year anniversary with MBA. And the CMB is that milestone that I wanted to achieve as part of this anniversary year. It was an involved process. It hits mm-hmm. every single aspect of mortgage lending in a 6-hour exam. You have to take the course as part of it. It's a six-week course that starts in January. But I would encourage anyone to reach out to me if they want more information on it. But it's a great way to meet a lot of incredible people in the industry as well through my study group, through sponsorship. Yep. So
yeah, the study groups are just so really good. And we connect and you have a new network, but it's a part of a group that really have taken this industry are taking their professional career commitment to another level. And I think it's outstanding. You've done it. I'm excited to say I've completed. Can't wait to get through into testing. So that 6-hour test, I don't know about. But we're here to talk about something else that's amazing this year. And that is earnings. That are these at all-time record levels that the MBA has kept? Is this all-time record?
Yes. They are records for our quarterly performance report data. We're at 167 basis points, which translates into a little bit higher than $4,500 alone in net profits. So that's after you pay your loan officers, after you pay all the processors, underwriters, closers, all your technology costs, companies are making $4,500 per loan. So the last time we were even close to that was in 2012 during the height of the HARP refinancings when we were at about 120 basis points.
Okay.
So this is certainly a record for our performance report that goes back to 2008.
Les, get you in on this discussion right away. You were so gracious to send over what the MBA published, net pre-tax production profits. And Q4 2018, it was a negative 3 bips. First quarter 2019, 18 bips, basis points by bips for those of you who are new to the industry. Second Q2 a year ago was 63 bips, 79 bips through third quarter and fourth quarter, 50 bips and 64 bips for first quarter this year and jumping all the way up and over 100 bip bump. Les, your thoughts on all of this and then let you fire off the first question to Marina.
It's really astonishing, isn't it? About 2 years ago, if you look at volumes have tripled in many mortgage companies over the last 2 years, and now they're earnings have tripled, or their margins have tripled. So Marina, great to have you with you. I've first met you when you first joined MBA back in 2000, and you've certainly had the privilege to serve under three great leaders, Doug Duncan and Jay Brinkman, and now Mike Frattantoni. It's a privilege to know you're certainly one of the top analysts in our business. I put you right up there with Marty Young over at Goldman Sachs and Lori Goodman. It's great to have you on the show.
Oh, thank you, Les. Appreciate that.
You are wonderful. And you are, by the way, my favorite presenter every time I go to conferences. If you're presenting, you do such a great job in the way you bring insight. So your comments to Housing Wire, you noted that how total production expenses has also dropped, that it went from just under $9,000 per loan to now just above $7,000 a loan. So about an $850 per loan drop. And those expenses as commissions and occupancy, compensation, equipment. So what was really driving the drop in expenses?
On the expense side, if you look through the detail, it's not sales expenses that are driving this. Going back to some of the comments that Andy made on sales compensation, the expenses are really being caused by this record volume. And fixed costs divided by this record volume means that on a per loan basis, costs are dropping. But it's mostly in the processing, underwriting, closing, overall fulfillment side as opposed to the sales side, because at the same time, we have record loan balances. And since loan officers are paid in basis point, fixed amount on basis points, their compensation is certainly not dropping. And so I think in terms of loan balances, we're at about $282,000 per loan on average, which also is a steady record. But honestly, the story in terms of that net production income is not an expense story. Yes, we saw a bit of a drop, but that is not a steady record. The real story is on the revenue side, whether it's due to capacity management issues, whether it's definitely related to the Fed and our incredibly low interest rates and this incredible borrower demand and MBS purchases, we're looking at revenues of 429 basis points, which translates into a little over $11,500 per loan in revenues. So it's important to know it is a revenue story. Productivity is looking really good. So expenses are involved, but really in terms of the record levels, it's being driven primarily by the revenue.
With the industry running this hot, what type of capacity problems is the industry having to deal with? Not just trying to find people, but also to manage people when they're having to do so much. Is this productivity going to be sustained?
Yeah, that's a very good question, because we just had a human resources symposium last week, and this was a big topic of conversation. When people have their, quote, regular lives back, is this productivity sustainable? But yeah, we're seeing steady records in terms of productivity. We've heard from many mortgage companies saying that their employees are more productive working from home. And so in terms of sales, we're looking at closings per sales FTE of about 8 loans per month, and then closings per fulfillment FTE of about 7 per month. So yeah, strong results. Yeah, that's the big question, is how sustainable is this going forward? And so it's tough to tell, but I would say that I think this movement to remote work is not ending anytime soon, even if the COVID pandemic were to end tomorrow. I think a lot of companies are rethinking their remote work arrangement because they are seeing high productivity.
Are you already seeing mortgage companies deciding to shrink their space? We're from anecdotally, we're seeing people cut back space on right now by 20 to 30%.
Yeah, I have not heard that much about cutting space yet, but that would certainly be on the table if they're talking about keeping a good portion of their workforce remote.
I think this is coming out of some conversations Les and I are having with some of our clients. It's in the consideration stage, and I think it's advancing further than just the consideration stage. I think it's actually moving forward. You mentioned Danny Schell. I want to get him in on the conversation, and Les, jump in a little bit later on here with some more questions, because I know you've got a lot of them. So, Andy Schell, welcome in on this interview with Marina, one of your favorite people.
Thanks, Dave. Hey, Marina. It's great to have you here.
So hey, Andy.
So much we could talk about when we would go on and on about fixed overhead allocated over additional units drives per unit cost down. But people's eyes roll back in their heads pretty quickly when we get too deep into scale economies. So let's focus on some stuff that's really interesting, like profits per geographic area. How are you seeing profit among independent mortgage banks differ by geographic area in the U.S.?
It really depends on whether we look in basis points or dollars per loan, but the long and short is that we're seeing the highest profits in the South and the lowest profits in California right now. We have data broken out into California, Northeast, Texas, Midwest, the West without California, and then the South without Texas. And so the South without Texas is at about 178 basis points, or $5,000 per loan. So on a per loan basis and in basis points, the South is looking the best. Now, loan balances come into effect because obviously
right, exactly.
In the Midwest and places of the South, their loan balances are lower than California. So if you incorporate the effects of the loan balances, California kind of bumps up to almost $4,800 per loan, which is $200 per loan shy of where the South is. So it's a pretty tight band. all regions of the country are at least 146 basis points or better, which is pretty incredible.
That is. That's amazing. Thanks, Marina. So, Dave, I'll throw it back so others can participate.
Good, good. Alice, I get you in on this discussion.
Thanks, everybody. Hey, so, Marina, can we look ahead just for a little bit to say at some point we have refinanced the majority of the population that's, you know, eligible and it makes sense for? What do you see out of these factors that's really going to have an impact as that volume drops?
Yeah, and for this, I hate forecasting profitability, but officially production volume, and we've gone through about three adjustments to our forecast this year so far, and in August, you may have noticed that the MBA adjusted its forecast again for refinancing. So if you look at 2020, we're talking about a $3 trillion market, very close to it, 2.99, just shy of it, and of that, about 1.6 trillion is related to refinancing. Fast forward to 2021, we're looking at refinancing less than half of that. We're looking at refinancings more in the range of 720 billion, a pretty big change in terms of refinancing. Very bullish in terms of purchase originations continuing to go up. There's definitely housing demand, and purchase originations go up next year to about 1.4 trillion. But the big story is going to be what happens with refinancings in 2021. So obviously that's going to influence what the overall profitability is going to be if those refinancings drop by that much.
Interesting to take a look at what the refinancing is going to do. That's a big question. I've had several client calls already this morning, and we're looking forward to 2021 and saying, okay, is everything that's going to be refinanced going to be refinanceable? I don't know. We got to get Mike Frattoni on here. But you work with Mike. It was so good. I invited him to join us here. He says, no, I'm not sharing the stage. I just want to get Marina on here. Yeah, I mean, as you look at that, now we're going to go over to Alan here in just a second. What is the MBA's latest projections on that? I know you're getting over into Mike's turf.
Yeah, again, very significant drop off in refinancings, and that really continues into 2022 on the refinancing side, but incremental increases each year in terms of the purchase side. So the purchase side, things are looking pretty good. I think in 2022 for purchases, it's going to be up pretty significantly to almost 1.5. So that continues to go up, but the refinancing is the piece that's really dropping down. So in 2022, we're looking at refinancings that are going to be 1.6 trillion or so for 2020. Fast forward 2 years, that could be down as far as 430 billion.
Yeah, that's interesting.
So yeah, very significant drop off.
Tell Michael hello and how much we appreciate him and his forecasts. I remember pulling up to the table at one of the conferences and sitting there with one other economist, and then Doug Duncan pulls up the table. I said, wow, we've got two economists. And Doug interjected quickly with his famous humor. He says, yep, and that means you're guaranteed at least three opinions, which is classic.
Yeah, anyway, a lot of people take the averages of the three organizations and combine them together, or the two organizations and combine them. So
Doug's got a great sense
I'm
of humor.
I'm sticking with ours.
Alan Pollack, good to have you here with us. I know you always are focusing on technology. What questions do you have for Maria?
Oh, yeah. Thanks for being here again. We love talking to you. And obviously, record volume, record growth, record operational efficiency, the ability to drive costs down and increase profit, all I think would not be possible if it wasn't for the technology investments that we've all been making, whether one lender directly has made those investments or their partners and relationships have made those investments. The question I'm going to ask obviously is, with some of the analysis you've been doing, how much of it is technology focused and can be directly correlated to technology, or however you think is best to answer that kind of question?
Yeah, sure. Actually, we do a tech profile survey every year, by the way. So if anyone is interested in participating in it, it's still out. And that looks primarily at the emerging technologies and borrower adoption of the emerging technologies on the origination side. So I give that little plug. But in terms of what we're tracking, in terms of overall technology costs, we track the percentage of technology expenses expense to total company expense. And right now, this is through our MBA and Stratmore peer group roundtable data. Right now, we're at about 8% for a group of 100 mortgage companies. That was in 2019. So it's a bit dated, but we're talking about 8%. But interestingly, going back to some of your comments on community banks and credit unions and the large banks versus the independents, it might surprise you to know that they're actually spending more as a percentage of their total company expenses on this technology. But a lot of it might be having to do with patchworking and band-aiding the existing legacy systems that
it's
need
so
to
true.
Be able to converse with the newer systems. So interestingly, in terms of the overall cost on the expense side, those percentages are higher than the independents based on our study. At the same time, it's a matter of what that expense is going towards.
Just one quick interjection there. I would completely agree. I think financial institutions lump some of that investment into their core banking platform because everything's got to connect to their main system. And when you're an independent mortgage lender, you don't have as much complexity to deal with. It's not that it's easy, but it's a lot easier. And when you're a financial institution, there's a lot of other pieces to the puzzle. So that technology investment is quite wide.
I want to shift gears into servicing in just a minute, but I want to briefly touch on the pull-through rate, which is interesting. That has increased from 67% in the first quarter to 71%, but it's still not up to where it was, if I understand the Housing Wire article correctly, of 78%. Comment on that briefly before we go into servicing.
I think rates were going down in the second quarter. So FAR were using their free put option and looking for a better rate. And so you did have that pull through. And as it is, if you have capacity management issues, the loan hasn't moved along quick enough to close it, then that gives more of an opportunity for borrowers to shop around.
Let's get into servicing. When you're looking at servicing overall profitability, understandably, that has taken a hit. If you can talk about that, and then I'm going to go over to Les and then wrap it up with Andy on servicing. Talk about that. Took a hit. Not surprised.
Yes, it definitely took a hit. It's been taking a hit actually for quite a few quarters now. And the reason is twofold. First, you have these mortgaging servicing right write-downs and amortization. So that's just due to the prepayment activity. So that's common when you look at net financial income, since we're booking the servicing asset upfront as part of your originations income statement, you amortize it on the servicing side. So I always say zero in terms of net financial income on the servicing side might be actually a good place to be because it means your model was perfect. So we were seeing a loss of $68 per loan overall. And then the quarter before, in the first quarter, it was a loss of $171 per loan. But it's important to keep in mind two things. First of all, we're also seeing a loss in servicing income as delinquencies go up. So that's something that could continue. And another thing that we're seeing in the second quarter is a tremendous increase in the percentage of these 350 mortgage lenders retaining servicing because of the implosion in the servicing market in the second quarter. And so all of a sudden, the servicing retention went from 20% for this sample up to nearly 40%. So why is that important? It might not be important right now, but going back to Andy's comments on save your capital, this is the gold rush right now, hold on to your cash. That means that a lot more independents may have servicing portfolios that they'll need to work through in a higher forbearance, higher delinquency environment looking forward. Of course, depending on what happens with the overall unemployment rate and our economy.
Yeah. Les Parker, and then we'll get over to you, Andy, as we wrap it up. Go ahead, Les. Servicing.
It's interesting. Capital planning is becoming really dicey for 2021, it appears to me. And there's a quote that says, tell me what rates will be and I'll tell you how much money I'll make. I'm not sure that's going to be the best way to plan for your future. But so how should mortgage companies plan for 2021, considering the 100-year flood in applications is ending and that servicing now is going to have to deal with delinquency? And that warehouse lenders and even different authorities are starting to say, ask mortgage companies, what's your plan for the future?
Yeah, I think that's the key. Plan is to have a plan. It's important to do the stress testing and situation now where we have record profit, plan for the rainy day, because we know in the industry that the rainy day will come. And so it's very important to enjoy what's here now, but plan for the future.
Which gets it right over to Andy. You said it so well. This is the time to be making sure, deal wisely with the money you're making. Andy Schell?
Thanks, Dave. Hi again, Maria. Yeah, so I'm going to continue to talk about that exact topic over the next several weeks on planning for this. But one of the things that you touched on talking about servicing forbearance, delinquency, is and also high MSR. People have been retaining servicing. We've had great profits. So potential advances have been masked with this high cash flow from the origination activity. But what happens when the delinquencies increase, refinances slow down, cash flow slows down, delinquency potentially increases even more, advances increase even more? Do you see a perfect storm in 2021?
Perhaps. A lot of it is dependent, again, on what happens with our economy. We've had really mixed signals. We've had some great news on the labor front, but we're also digging out of a very deep hole in terms of overall unemployment claims. So it's really hard to tell, but that's why MBA has been pushing an overall liquidity facility beyond the Ginnie Mae liquidity facility and the cap of 4 months for the Fannie and Freddie loans. So it's something that we continue to think will, you know, whether it's used or not, it just provides some confidence for the market to have that general liquidity facility in place. But you're right. Now we were saved by all these prepayments. You could use the prepayments for the advances, which has helped. But still, we are looking at, for instance, record high delinquencies in the second quarter for FHA. And that's the highest since 1979. So there's Yeah, you can't really hide that. It's there. That's actually the loan type we're most concerned about, is what's going to happen with FHA. But I think we're in a better place than we were for the last recession, in that there are a lot of loss mitigation options in place. And in addition to that, it's a different situation with the housing markets, where we have limited inventory out there. That presents, and we still have home price appreciation. So we have a situation where there are more exit strategies beyond foreclosure. And I think that the agencies are doing a pretty good job of rolling out these new loss mitigation options. So I think it's a really different place than we were in the last crisis.
That's good to hear. Thank you very much, Marina.
Yeah, so great information. Folks, we're getting a lot of questions in. How can people get access to your latest report on this?
Yes, the full report is available if you go to www.mba.org/performance-report. There is a little bit of a fee involved, but our full press release is online if you want to just look at the press release. But again, www.mba.org/performance-report.
The press release is great, but you really need to get the report, folks. So if you want to take a look at it, there's a lot of great detail work in that. And Marina, to you and your staff, we say kudos for the work that you do. Thank you. It's a great service to the industry. Appreciate you so much for coming on. Mike was right. Why would Michael Frattantoni, who I also invited to come on, you guys do so well as you present together. And so, Michael, one other question that came in, you mentioned the HR symposium that happened last week. Is there anything, there was any ahas that came out of it? I can almost anticipate what that might be, but are any other ahas that came out of that symposium last week?
There were a lot of ahas in terms of in relation to working from home and the wage and hour rules. I'm not on the legal side, so I don't want to opine, but I would say you want to run that by your legal counsel in terms of whether you're using the outside sales exemption or not. That seems to be a hot topic. Alice, I don't know if you want to say any more on that, but that seems to be a topic of interest for a lot of the HR directors, in addition to a lot of discussion around diversity, inclusion, and equity initiatives at mortgage companies.
Yeah, Alice said she apologized. She wrote me a note. Tell Marina how much I enjoyed having her on the podcast. She had to run to a meeting, so she wanted me to send that, pass that on to you. But also, I think what's really interesting, I'm sure that came out of there, was the retention and recruiting challenges. It's probably got to be the
Absolutely.
Number one for everybody there.
Absolutely. When we did a poll, actually, that was their number one concern, was retention and recruiting. So good point.
Good stuff. And Marina, thank you so much for being here with us. We've had as our guest Marina Walsh, Vice President, Industry Analyst at the MBA, and her latest title is CMB. Congratulations. Celebrating that.
Thank you all.
All the best. But anyway, thanks so much for being here with us. Good to have you with us, listeners. Thank you so much, Les Parker, for joining us on this interview. Andy Schell, Alice Alvey, Alan, all the others, thank you so much for being here. As a part of this, next week we've got Mike coming on of the CMLA. Very excited to have him, Michael Jones, of CFO of Thrive Mortgage. We're going to be talking to him about what some of their focus is, what they're looking at. Love how these agencies work together. Special thank you to all of our sponsors, Finastra, CMLA, MBA, Indicom, Accelerate, and with advisors, Mobility RD, Modex, and all the others. Check them out on our sponsorship page. Appreciate you being here, everyone. Have a great week. And look forward to having you back here next week.
You've been listening to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Transformational Mortgage Solutions. Join us next week, and thanks for listening.